I'd like to read to you tonight a poem dedicated to a guru, and it's entitled My Sant Sat Guru. In my Sant Sat Guru is my implicit trust. He has called me out from amidst the heedless multitude. He has set my feet upon the path of the masters. With tender mercy, he administers all of my experiences, pleasant and unpleasant, but wholly beneficent. When I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for he is with me. He has brought my soul into resonant harmony with the audible life stream, our own. I shall thereby be freed from the five perversions, the wheel of reincarnation, and the limitations of the material envelopes. I shall also enjoy unlimited love for him and conscious, visual, blissful association with him in the realms of the superphysical. With loving kindness, he will reconduct me to the place from whence I came, and I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Our Bible chapter tonight is from St. Luke, chapter 6, beginning with verse 39. And he spake a parable unto them. Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch? The disciple is not above his master, but every one that is perfect shall be as his master. And why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Either how canst thou say to thy brother, Brother, let me pull out the mote that is in thine eye, when thou thyself beholdest not the beam that is in thine own eye? Thou hypocrite, cast out first the beam out of thine own eye, and then shalt thou see clearly to pull out the mote that is in thy brother's eye. For a good tree bringeth not forth corrupt fruit, neither doth a corrupt tree bring forth good fruit. For every tree is known by his own fruit. For of thorns men do not gather figs, nor of a bramble bush gather they grapes. A good man out of the good treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is good, and an evil man out of the evil treasure of his heart bringeth forth that which is evil. For of the abundance of the heart his mouth speaketh. And why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say? Whosoever cometh to me and heareth my sayings and doeth them, I will show you to whom he is like. He is like a man which built an house and digged deep and laid the foundation on a rock. And when the flood arose, the stream beat vehemently upon that house and could not shake it, for it was founded upon a rock. But he that heareth and doeth not is like a man that without a foundation built an house upon the earth, against which the stream did beat vehemently, and immediately it fell, and the ruin of that house was great. I want to talk to you tonight about, providing my voice lets me, about the science of the soul. We hear of Christian science. This is a science of the Christ. But this same science is known and has been known to many other of the great religions of the world. This science is definitely known by the Sikh masters in India, for instance, because they call their science the Rada Somi science. Or Radha, I should say, so many times. Now, Radha represents the soul. They speak always of Radha and Krishna and the tremendous relationship they have. They picture Radha always as the female principal crying out after Krishna, her Christ. And this it is with the human soul, constantly crying out for the divine. Even those who are still steeped in ignorance and darkness cry out for the light. But they try to satisfy their yearnings with the things of the senses, and they do not realize that they but compound all of the misery which they are trying to get rid of in order that they might find happiness. Until the soul is awakened on the road to Damascus, as was Paul's soul, by the Christ light or the Krishna consciousness, that soul can never hope to become what it truly is in God. The science which you are taught is the highest science there is. It is without name, it is without organization, it is without charge. This science is based upon the knowledge and the realization that this universe and all of the universes come from God and God alone. That in truth, that all that we see around us, having been created from God, is God living his life. It is the reality of God. And that essence, that principle of spirit, puts on many, many garbs. But nevertheless, that reality, that life, is in the midst of every living thing. It is that life. Now, if all of the universe is of God, we call this the macrocosm, then all of ourselves, the individual human being, which thinks of itself in the human ego sense, is the microcosm or the individual part of God. This soul, this microcosm, must be joined with the macrocosm. When that comes into play within the human consciousness, it is only through the mind that God can be realized. Now, it is true that we use our minds constantly in the human sense. And as has been discussed before, we do not try to control our minds. And this is one of the things that we are taught to do on this path, is the control of the mind. We have taken a few very simple techniques, all of them contained within ourselves. It is most important that you realize that the methods taught by some spiritual teachers takes you outside of your own being, helps you to focus, for instance, on a candle, on a looking glass, on a rose, a flower of some kind, or some object, on a pyramid. But yet we are told that God and the kingdom of heaven are within. Now when you focus on these outer things, you are apt to come in contact with things of the astral world. And what you are after is your identity with the supreme identity, or God, who is equally present everywhere. We teach that over all of the macrocosm and the microcosmic principles, there is one supreme governing consciousness. That mind which is instilled within us is a part of that. But in the beginning, because it is saturated with the knowledge of all of the things of the senses, it cannot open the door to its greater consciousness or the cosmic consciousness which is equally present everywhere and which is the controlling and motivating force of the universe. In order to know all of these things and to understand them clearly, you must be given a key. And when the time comes that the soul is ripe and ready, the key is given to the disciple. And that key is the living master. That master will help you to open the door of your own soul, of your own consciousness. That master will help you to realize your greatest potential, to take you out of the human into the divine. In the beginning, you think that you can find happiness and satisfaction if you can have a new house, if you can have new clothes, if you can have a family, if you can be located in business in a place of your choice, that which is dearest to your heart. If you can have a new car, a new boat, if you can attain a certain position, all of these things you think bring happiness. But when gradually these things are given to you as a result either of your prayers or the power of your concentration upon them, you find them wanting. And still you are reaching out for something greater than that which you have. You aren't satisfied. And everything that you thought would bring you happiness gradually turns to ashes. There's something wrong. Still, you are living in between the pairs of opposites, joy and sorrow, heat and cold. All of these different things that make up the dual world. It is only when the Master comes that he teaches you the way to the infinite. And each one who is ready for that higher indoctrination must have a living master in order to take him. I can remember one time when the Master was asked the question, "Master, after you are gone, who will take your place?" And he said, "Only love can take my place." He also said that his teachings would be the living guru. But still, he appointed a successor, a spiritual head. And that is supposed to be handed down from master to master to master. When the disciple is ready, then the guru confers that high honor and gives the closest disciple, the disciple who has proven himself worthy to shoulder the burden of leadership, his spiritual mantle. Now, after Rajasi's passing in our own line of gurus, things were such that he did not and could not appoint a spiritual successor. So one was elected by a board of directors. But always this is handed down, and there must be a living teacher, because every man, every soul, needs a bridge between himself and the infinite. There are many people who think that they can go it on their own, that through reading the scriptures, through reading spiritual books, by performing certain techniques which they find in these books, even without the help of a spiritual teacher, that they can reach God realization, but they cannot. They never will. And in here tonight, it speaks very clearly when it says, "Can the blind lead the blind? Shall they not both fall into the ditch?" You cannot hope to become a spiritual teacher. You cannot hope to help someone else to that which you yourself have not realized. It is literally impossible. It is truly the blind leading the blind. Further than that, it enhances the human ego, which is the very thing that must go before the final realization of your oneness with God can come into being. So you must come with all humility to the feet of the Master. Now, what does the Master do for you? The Master initiates you. The Master will give you the highest initiation which he has. And then he will teach you. Now, in the secular path, he will teach you certain exercises, certain asanas. He will teach you how to rejuvenate your body. He will teach you proper ways of life and of living, moral behavior. He will teach you, perhaps in some cases, what you should eat and what you should not eat. All of these things he will teach you to help you to combat and to take care of the things which have drawn you through the senses and kept you earthbound. In the mystical sense, he will give you the supreme initiation, but he will also give you a few other techniques to help you to concentrate, to help to indoctrinate you and keep you on the path. These things are very necessary in order that the devotee may progress on the path. There are many teachers who give many, many exercises. Some give just a few, as I do, because I don't want the mind cluttered up with the ways and the means. I want the mind fixed totally, completely, and to the exclusion of all else upon God alone, who is the supreme guru of us all. That must come. Now, many times the disciple thinks he knows everything about the guru, the reason, the why fors of everything that is being done with regard to that particular one. But no disciple can ever hope to totally know the guru until he himself attains the state of total union with God. Because again, he who has not seen the light of God certainly cannot show it to anyone else. In here it says the disciple is not above his master, but every one that is perfect shall be as his master. Now this means truly that there isn't just one master outside of the Supreme Master God, but in the human sense, that there isn't just one master, and that no one else can ever hope to become as perfect as that one. But rather it states very clearly that everyone that becomes perfect shall be as his master. And these are in the words of Christ, these thoughts. They are not peculiar to me. They are not my invention. Christ himself, whom many of the Christians take to be the only master who ever lived, who ever will live, made that statement. So that indeed is hope for us all. Also it goes on to say, and why beholdest thou the mote that is in thy brother's eye, but perceivest not the beam that is in thine own eye? We are so constantly looking at everybody else and finding fault with the things that we think are wrong in that individual. But do we ever give ourselves as close a scrutiny? Do we ever really examine ourselves as closely as we examine the actions of our friends, of our neighbors, and particularly our enemies? No, we do not. And yet in another place in the Bible, it says very specifically and definitely, judge not, lest ye be judged. In other words, we should always withhold judgment. There is a great difference between criticism, judging, and analyzing. I analyze everyone who comes before me, not consciously as though I'm dissecting them, but immediately God takes me into the midst of them, so to speak. He shows me what they are, what I have to work with. And then he takes me in the midst of myself and he tells me what to do about them. Now, in every case, I must listen very carefully. I must make sure that I obey God's directions, that I may not advise anybody to go against his laws. There are many tests that come to the disciple under the direction of a guru. Not all of them are either easy or understandable, but they are necessary. And for every single psychological blow that is dealt to your human ego, you should be extremely grateful. We can't always understand that in the beginning. We don't realize it, and certainly we don't accept it. But gradually, as time goes on, and different experiences result in certain events, certain realizations within our consciousness expands, And we start to realize what indeed the guru is doing for us. As I have stated many times before, the guru-disciple relationship is a divine romance between every disciple and God in the guru. It is not a personal thing in the way that we think of it in the human sense. It is a spiritual union. And it is between that one and the many who come. But the guru treats each one in accordance with the direction from within, in accordance with what that one needs for his or her own particular and peculiar development. And no other individual can judge what the guru is doing with any disciple, because he's not in a position to know. He can only hope to know God within himself if he does all of the things that the guru directs. If he will do that, then indeed he will find peace and happiness and attain his goal. Now, some of the techniques that are given to you, one particular is the technique of seeing the spiritual eye in the center of the forehead. Now, this is governed and controlled by the pineal gland. This is the spiritual gland. And as you concentrate more and more, you will find that this pineal, or pineal as it is sometimes called, gland, expands, and it is through this that your visions come. But you are not interested in astral visions, in visions of any type, except the vision of the light, great light of your own soul. So you should refuse these things. See the spiritual eye, but go to the center of it. Do not be satisfied with lesser lights. Do not be satisfied with other experiences that come to you. But rather go right to the center. Go through that spiritual eye, which is the gateway to heaven within yourself. Do not get discouraged. Remember that you must persist. Persistence is the byword which will take you all the way to the infinite. Do not give up, and do not expect things to happen because you have faithfully practiced something for a few days, a few weeks, a few months, or even a few years. Because don't forget that you have been incarnations in coming to the point where you even have desired to be one with God, where you've even realized the necessity of it. So how can you expect to do in such a short time that which has taken you years to come away from? You have been going in exactly the opposite direction, and not in the direction which you were meant to go. And yet, if you don't accomplish this, you think that you will give up. You're discouraged. You get very provoked, very frustrated. And in lots of cases, you do give up. And it's a shame, because maybe just around the corner, you will start to get some results. Another method is that of breath control. Because breathlessness is deathlessness. It is also a way of attaining the state of suspended animation. It is the way of rejuvenating your body. It is the way of agelessness. It is the way of total communion with God while still conscious, so that you have risen above the trance-like state and you are fully conscious, fully in control of everything within your body. And yet, through the method that is given you, you are able to slow down your bodily functions and finally stop them and be in this tremendous state of suspended animation. But one of the greatest ones is tuning in with the Word of God, the audible life stream. And this word can be heard very, very clearly. And it is a high-pitched sound. You get so that you can hear it at will. You don't hear it even when you are still and concentrate on it sometimes, because you think it to be some other type of sound than what it is. It is very high-pitched, but it is constant. It is steady. As I put my mind upon the word this instant, I can hear it very loudly within myself. This is the Word of God. This is God made manifest. It is from this Word that this whole creation has stemmed. And so as it came, the Word came out from God, so you, by concentrating on this Word, by making it the only thing which passes your lips, you can go all the way back to God. It takes you through many planes of consciousness, because you see, there are many planes of consciousness even above this physical one. And so the few techniques that are given to you will help you to go through step by step these various planes of consciousness until you become one with the universal light, the universal intelligence, the universal energy, and truly your soul will be joined to that of the infinite. Radha Soni, you are the eternal female before God. You will remember that, I believe it was in the autobiography, that Master told the story about the woman who wanted to be the devotee of a great male saint. So she went, and his chela came to the door and asked her what she wanted. She said she had come to ask the saint to take her as a devotee. And the chela said, "But he never takes women as his devotees. But I will ask him." So he went in and presented her case to the great saint. And the great saint sent word back that he did not accept women devotees. So the woman said to the chela, "Will you please tell your lord that it has always been my understanding that we are all females before him, the one lord of the universe." And because of what she said, the saint was humbled and accepted her as a disciple. And so it is, you see, whether you be a man or a woman, the Christ within you is the eternal bridegroom, and you are the bride seeking the bridegroom. But you must remember to have enough oil in your lamps. Do not be like the five virgins who were so busy doing other things that they neglected to put oil in the lamp, so that when the bridegroom came, those virgins who had oil in their lamps went to the marriage with the bridegroom. And the others then begged those who could go for oil to fill their lamps, but they would not do so. And they were left behind. So you must constantly fill your lamp with the oil of devotion. You must be ready for the coming of the Christ within your own consciousness. And believe me, that marriage is the most profound, the most beautiful, and the only lasting marriage that you will ever find in all of the world. Because in every human marriage, there are certain disappointments. There are certain dissensions, certain unhappiness. But yet, all of that can be changed. And it is for this purpose that the Lord put marriage in earth and made himself the first example in the form of the father, the mother, and the child. The family, the divine family, which is the example to every human being. And through the trials and the tribulations which come in every marriage, if you can see either your husband or your wife as God in human form, testing you, perhaps opposing you, sometimes loving you, sometimes filling you with joy, but whatever it may be, if you can see that this is God in this form, taking you to the realization of your oneness with him, it makes it a great deal easier, because you will learn self-control. You will learn self-mastery. In India, it is a prevalent custom for the woman to serve every husband, or serve her husband, I should say, as her lord. And it is the custom for every man to think of his wife as the divine mother manifested on earth. What a tremendous realization that is. And what a tremendous custom. Because it keeps the mind forever upon God and not upon the senses. There should be respect. There should be consideration. There should be a definite effort to change oneself constantly to measure up to what they should be in order to be the perfect representative of God, whether you be a representative of God the Father or God the Divine Mother. When you start to go through some of these tremendous spiritual experiences, you will find, perhaps, that one of your experiences will be that you will be lifted up and that you will feel yourself actually as the Divine Mother or as the Father God, depending on your nature within. This will come to you, but do not take it, you see, that you are the Supreme Lord of the universe. It is one of His ways of showing you that you are one with Him, part and parcel of His very self. And it is a fantastic experience. I know because I myself experienced it. It came to me in the form of the divinity of the Mother. And yet always, in my own personal case, I have looked to God the Father. But Master always said, he was a votary of the Divine Mother. He always made this statement, the Mother is always closer than the Father. I can hear him say it now. The Mother is closer than the Father. And so there are many men and women in the world today who pray to God as the Divine Mother because they feel their closeness to the Mother rather than the Father. Those who choose the way of fixing the attention upon the Father choose the way of discipline, and yet it is not something which you in fact choose. It is your nature to choose in that manner. And it is a more difficult path, I can assure you, because it is the path of discipline. It is the path of karma, in a sense. Now, everyone goes through the path of karma. When you come to the top, you realize, as you look back, and you think of the things that you have either read about or have been taught about the various paths of yoga, and you know that although one particular path may have been more appealing to you, more in accordance with your nature than any other path, still you have experienced every single one of the paths. Now the path of my master was Raja Yoga, yet I am far from a Raja Yogi, I can assure you. My path has been half bhakti and half karma. The path of Raja Yoga for myself does not appeal to me totally. I use much of what my master taught. I give the techniques which he taught because they are the best I know, regardless of any yogic path. But I myself am not a total Raja Yogi. And yet, having come to the state of consciousness through God's grace, which he has brought me to, I look back and I see that I am all paths. I see that encompassed within my life are all yogas, every single one of them. And being one with him, who is the guide, the director, the source of all, naturally he holds within himself all things, and he projects from himself all things. So regardless of what path you follow in the beginning, when you realize your oneness with God, you are one with all paths. But so many people make the mistake of keeping the consciousness fully upon the path and not upon the goal, not upon God, whether it be in the form of the Father or the Mother. And therefore, they cannot attain the supreme state until they take the word of God, which is called the name of God. Now, in addition to that, we teach the highest science, which is also given in the Bible. And that is the science of Kriya Yoga. The word Kriya means to act. It means to actually learn how to revolve the life current around the spine and through the brain, thereby hastening your evolution by hundreds of years. By doing this sacred technique 14 times in the morning, 14 times in the evening, you have 28 years worth of development every day, because it is said that for every time you practice this Kriya, as it is given in the initiation, that you have 1 year of development physically, mentally, and spiritually. It is the airplane route. So I teach you to take the name of God. I also give the supreme initiation. And if you will use both of these things, you will keep your consciousness forever fixed upon God. Every thought, every word, every action will be dedicated to Him. You will be inspired to go within and seek Him for yourself. But also, in doing so, you will look outside and you will see Him in every human being, regardless of race, color, or creed. You will see Him in every atom of space. You will see Him in the sun, the moon, the stars, of all creation, and of all the worlds beyond. You will have a conscious knowledge that He is everywhere equally present. So I think I may have told you once before, I met a very great saint the last time I was in India. And he insisted that you could not see God as the one and the many at the same time. And I insisted that you could, because I do. It was as simple as that. He wouldn't give, I wouldn't give. But nevertheless, finally he came over, and as I think I've told you, he said, "You are the Holy Mother." I told him I was nothing. He still insisted. I told him I was only God's child and His servant. Again, he insisted. So if he wanted me to be the Holy Mother, I was the Holy Mother. I told him, "All right, Baba, if that's the way you want it, but I know what I am. I know that I am only a tiny, infinitesimal spark of God. I am the smallest of His children, a single cell in His one vast body. I know that of myself I am nothing without my Father, who doeth the works completely within me. Regardless of how I act, regardless of how I speak, regardless of how I come on, at any given time, this I know with everything that is in me." And until you know that, you have not in any way surrendered yourself to the infinite. You have not, in fact, put your feet upon the first rung of the ladder of God realization. Because you must surrender every single part of yourself to God. Now this is the job which the guru undertakes when you come and ask for initiation. When you come and in many cases test the guru out to see if they are worthy for you to follow. It is not the guru who is doing the test, who should be tested, but it is the disciple. Is the disciple ready? Is the disciple worthy? Are they going to stay for a few weeks, a few months, or maybe come just once, or even a few years and then leave? Or are they going to stay until the end? This is the true test. And many tests are given. Sure, you will get bored sometimes. Sure, you will be offended. But what is it that gets bored? What is it that gets offended? Except the human ego, which must disappear totally and completely. And if the guru doesn't do what is necessary to get rid of this ego for you or to help you to do it, who in the world is able to do it? Who is capable of doing it? Think of these things. Think of these things. Now there are many people who follow a master who has passed on, but it is said that once God has sent a guru to you, if you are loyal to that one becomes your guru through incarnations and helps you even from the other side. Even after the so-called death of the body, the disappearance of the body. Because don't forget that the infinite spirit of God never dies. He is eternal. He is infinite. Now you must use your mind to go to God. There is no question of a doubt about it. But you should also be careful what you put into your mind and what you retain as constant companions. These thought processes that go back and forth and through the mind. You must be very careful. And that's why these techniques are given to you, to help you to concentrate upon God alone. So in the beginning, you are taught to concentrate upon the spiritual eye. You are taught to concentrate upon the breath, without which it is said you cannot live. And yet here we have a statement from the Masters, breathlessness is deathlessness. Eternal life. Eternal life. So what are they teaching us to do? They are teaching us to die. To die to the little self. to give up this life instead of holding on to it. He who shall save his life shall lose it. And he who shall lose his life for my sake shall have life everlasting. Life eternal. What a tremendous thing. So you die in order that you might live. And until you are willing to do that, you have not really surrendered yourself to God at all. This takes some doing. But we are so filled with fear. In the first place, we're afraid we've made the wrong choice. Sometimes we're afraid that we have chosen the wrong teacher. Why? Because the little ego is offended. It still quivers back and forth all the time, wondering, have I done the right thing? Have I done the wrong thing? I mustn't do the wrong thing, because if so, I will suffer. What is it that's going to suffer? Again, except this little ego. And you can't think of that. You can't think of that. Then you have fear. You are given certain techniques to do, and you don't know, never having done them before, what's going to be the result of doing these techniques. Just what experience are you going to have? And again, you withhold yourself. Again, you don't do the techniques faithfully as you should, because you're afraid to do them. Something might happen to you. Some entity might appear. You might have some experience which you will find it very difficult to go through. Yet in the 23rd Psalm, does it not say, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I shall fear no evil, for thou art with me. God is with you every moment. What is this valley of the shadow of death? What valley is it speaking of? What death is it speaking of? It is speaking of the death of the human ego. And God walks with you every inch of the way. You are made to lie down in green pastures. You are led beside the still waters. You have many experiences. Some of them are difficult, no doubt. But some of them are wonderful and beautiful. And regardless of which they turn out to be, these are with the things which God gives you. These are your tests. These things are the price which you must pay for this pearl of God realization. Now, do you want it or don't you want it? Are you a coward, a slave, or are you a hero? Are you filled with courage, bravery, whatever is necessary to reach your goal? Is your love for God so great that you are willing to die for him? Immediately you think of the death of the body, and you think that you will be dead, you won't live. That's a terrible thing to do to you. But supposing you were on an island all by yourself, supposing you were born there, and then perhaps your mother and father died when you were too young to really remember. And so you were raised alone on that island. You had no knowledge through seeing these events, which are common to human life, happen, because they have never been a part of your conscious experience. And yet, does this mean that you weren't born, that you won't die? No, it doesn't, because these are experiences which come to every soul. Each and every one of us that is here was born. Each and every one that is in the world was born. And someday, each and every one of us must go through the state of human death, but not the spiritual death. God forbid. Because when the body drops away, the life force departs, the consciousness departs, that part of God withdraws himself from this form which he has created. He wants to release himself. He wants to get out of this prison house, because he has new experiences, a new destiny planned for himself. More progress on the path, and he can only do it in this way. So we must learn acceptance of this fact that someday we have to go. So why not go willingly and joyfully? Why not love God so greatly that we are willing to sacrifice ourselves at his feet in whatever way he demands? The stories are told about the early Christians who sacrificed their lives gladly because of their belief in the Christ. But again, was this actual? Was it actually history? Or was it a parable told about what every man should do, and all the forces within himself, and the animals which he had to face and which devoured him? Do we not have these animalistic tendencies within ourselves that are constantly devouring the divine within us, keeping us from realizing who and what we are in God? Of course we do. Now it takes courage, but if your love, if your faith, if your yearning for God is great enough, they will seem as nothing before the great gift of the realization of your oneness with Him, the source, the supreme identity, the president of the universe, the father of us all. You are already that, don't forget, but remember this when you have fear, that you are that now, but still this mind, still the brainwashing that you have received, still all of the things of the senses keep you from realizing this. So you must go beyond the human mind into the divine mind of God. And then you will realize who and what you are. It takes work. It takes faith. And it takes absolute and total dedication. Never giving up. And don't change boats midstream. Because no matter how many times you change your religion, how many times you change your teacher, if you have found a true one and you have left that one to go to someone else whom you think can give it to you in an easier way with no effort on your part, disabuse your mind, because you'll never make it, never in this world. Give yourself totally to the Lord. Use the science of the Christ, the science of the soul, to find out who and what you are, so that you may realize your total oneness with the infinite beloved and be safe in His arms forevermore.